All right, man. Just finishing up this little scouting report here on Taylor Henderson. Taylor Hendricks.
Taylor Swift, baby.
I avoid as much exposure to the future prospects before the draft combine, before like everything starts coming down, as I can. So
sure.
Then it's like fire hydrant style, dig in, and you know, we've been kind of in this little bit of a kick right now where we're considering players that are maybe like a little bit outside of our draft position.
Sure.
So we might have to like trade up to get them or something like that. So Taylor Hendricks fits that bill. The question is he the type of player that we would trade up for as a target, or if he fell all the way to 12, which is very unlikely, would we want to pick him up? So let's play this game real quick, bro.
Yep.
This is no lie, bro. I got stuck between two players.
Okay.
Yep. So first of all, Taylor Hendricks, I'm going to make this assumption that he's not fast enough to get past his man in the NBA.
Okay.
All right, so if you're not fast enough to get past your man, then you're relying on elite offensive ability, ability to rise up and knock down shots.
Sure.
And at that high side, from his skill set, size, and everything, if he got to the best he could ever be, it would be like a Paul Pierce.
Okay.
Because he's going to need that ability to...
Mwani.
Play off pace, kind of, to get to where he wants to do and do the things he wants to do.
Sure.
But my biggest fear of Taylor Hendricks, this isn't fair, and everybody get pissed off who loves him. You should. Stanley Johnson.
Bro. All right. I'll be honest with you. If this is old school UFC or UCF, University of Central Florida, right, then I would say that he's too highly, you know, ranked. But they have now a pretty damn good schedule. He shows that he can play ball, especially on the defensive end. And again, this draft has a number of players that are incredibly amazing at defense. I look at who we talked about, Jairus Walker, the other day. His defensive impact right away would be powerful. Tyler Hendricks is the same exact way, man.
Listen,
his
man.
Defensive impact is coming on right away, is perfect. But more so, his scoring ability, I would feel, is more advanced than Jairus's at this point of his career. So to me, like, this is why Tyler Hendricks is ranked higher than Jairus in most draft boards, is because his shot ability. He's a 40% spot-up shooter.
Taylor Hendricks and Jairus Walker concern me for the same fucking reasons, bro. And it's just like, offensively, they're not refined enough to say like they can guarantee make an impact. You know, like, think about this guy, Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn came in, he was known what he was going to be able to contribute defensively, and the offense would come along, and it never came along. And he's a good defender, but he just can't play offense. Like, my problem with Jairus Walker, like, you talked me into it, but I still, in the back of my mind, I keep thinking, low end, Jairus Walker ends up not being able to guard any of the five positions at an elite level.
Sure.
Right? He's good in, like, in switch situations, but, like, an example, it would be kind of like the way Ibaka, like, he led the league in blocks, I think, but he really wasn't good on the ball defender. Like, Jairus Walker could find himself in a position where he's, like, making a defensive impact, but he can't stop his man at the same same time, right? Because, like, his lack of, like, height. And
sure.
Taylor Hendricks, I'm like, yeah, he can block some fucking shots. Like, his shot blocking is good, but, like, I don't know.
I have a comp with him as Ibaka. You know, and this is, you know, with all due respect to Ibaka, but, you know, he was never somebody that you're going to expect to average 18 points a game.
What's up,
Bunk?
What's up, Road Dog?
You know, and I think that's the thing for me. I look at some of these players that are on this draft board, right? And if we're looking for the complete player at 12, it's going to be hard to find. I mean, Anthony Black could fall very easily. There's other players that could fall easily, or that we're underlooking right now that, you know, we're just not taking a good look at. But the reality is that every single one of these players at 12 are not going to be the typical players that are available.
Go ahead. Yeah,
they're going to be, there's just too much. There's too much. There's so many young guys at this position. You're picking a player that has an upside in the offensive ability, and then their defense is sound, right? Because that's how you get, I mean, look at J-Dub. He was getting in there and playing defense. And then even for if you think about when Shay and I don't know who it was, Shay and somebody, KD, Shay and KD were talking shit. And Shay goes, if you're not careful, I'm going to stick my rookie on you. Like, that was before the All-Star game. And that's the type of idea that they already had, that J-Dub was already a top defender on the team. That's at All-Star break. So for me, that's my thing, is like, if a player can come in and make an immediate impact on that defensive end, it's going to allow them to open their offensive game.
You can do that, but you can't do that without stopping your man. Like, okay, so there's all sorts of players.
And that's the biggest thing. If you look at Jairus Walker,
Taylor Hendricks is ready to guard the three position tomorrow.
I think Taylor Hendricks right now could guard 2, 3, or 4.
Okay.
Right
in,
now. Now
in a switch position, but I don't see him actually being able to take on elite threes in
the
NBA.
Here's the thing. When you talk about elite threes, he can take them for elite twos. I'm sorry. Let's go elite twos. If he has to take an elite two that's very, very quick, especially as rookie, he's going to get beat. Yes, he's going to get beat. But if he is forced to look at it like, okay, I've got a little bit of slower two, and I got to switch on, he'll be fine. If he has to
perfect Raptors player.
Here's the thing. He's not a perfect Raptors. He's a perfect Pacers player.
Okay, but like
when you look at the structure of the Pacers, this is what they like.
Mm-hmm. Like, and if you're sitting down though, Thunder people player on NBA 2K or whatever, which I haven't done for years and years and years, like a decade at least. So 6'9", can handle the ball, can shoot from anywhere on the court, and you just fill your team up with those. That's what the Raptors do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but does he have it right here? Because in the end, if you don't have the it factor on the inside, like everybody wants to go like, he compares to KD. Not necessarily to Taylor Hendricks. I haven't seen that necessarily. But everybody, whenever they're 6'9" and they can shoot on the perimeter, there's always this comp to KD. Well, 6'9", sure. You know, ball handle, can shoot on the perimeter. Go watch, like, not you, Dave. I know you know. But anybody else who wants to say that, go watch KD's freshman year highlights at Texas. He was a goddamn motherfucking killer.
Man. I got to say is, when you're a big man, you have to have a motor. And that's what you're talking about.
I look at
all the motors that we have looked at in this draft, every single motor that I've looked at. And I got to tell you, the best motor in this draft is Jairus Walker. The second best motor in this draft, I would have to say, is Tyler Hendricks.
William. What's up, William?
It's Tyler. Isn't it Tyler?
It's Taylor.
Taylor. Taylor Hendricks.
I don't want to trip you out, dude.
But here's the thing, though. If you look at the way that when he gets beat, right, and the chase down block shots that he does, he's able to see and recognize where the defense is at all times. And I think that's one of the things that you see is that if a player can put it together.
Yeah.
What?
His best blocks were against chumps.
Well, but my point, though, is that any time that you see a player that looks at the defensive end and that's on the opposite side of the court, and by the time that other guard gets to the hole, he's there blocking the shot, that's a high IQ play. That's a player that you look at and say, if he's able to do that at this level, this should translate into at least 2 or 3 positions in the NBA. Because, again, it's the understanding of saying he's locked into that goal. He's not going to pass the ball. You're understanding who you're playing against. And he has this unique ability to understand where to be at on defense that I look at and saying, if you're looking at a great defender to draft a great defender in this draft, and which the Pacers always like, you're going to look at Tyler Hendricks as a real possibility because he's going to fill in that role.
The thing I ask myself over and over and over again, maybe this wasn't fair, but like, is this a play that Stanley Johnson couldn't make in college? And that, like, because here's why. When you make it up an NBA player, you could build a player and be like, this guy could be Michael Jordan. He's 6'6". He can jump probably 40 inches. He could. But then it's like, does he really understand the game? Does he really understand the competitive nature of the game? And, like, his highlights reminded me of, like, what you would see, like, a high school player who was just absolutely fucking dominant.
Yeah, but you got to look at, he's 19 years old playing in a what I would consider great competition. A lot of teams they play are good teams because they play out of their conference, but the conference they play in isn't necessarily known for basketball conference. So he's going to stand out in those games, you know? And I think that's the thing is that, like,
remember those games against that team from Alabama that we used to play with growing up, their Central Park, and they
Central Park, Alabama.
Yeah, every player on their team is going to a division.
Yeah, they had a couple players that went straight from high school to the NBA.
None of those guys that I remember made it in the NBA.
No, there was one player that played 5 years in the NBA. He was a 7-foot-1 guy, right. But never got off the bench in the 5 years.
He was a big dude. He was a really big.
Yeah, I scored 22 points against him and grabbed 14 rebounds.
Right, but here's the thing:
it's like fuck you. You're 7-1. I can play better than you.
Yeah, I mean he's a chunker, but in the end, there's a difference between having an NBA body and understanding how to compete at the level that you have to. And the competitive drive, to me, I really question with Taylor Hendricks. I saw
the competitive drive is something to be concerned about, but the motor is something that I have to say is something I'm impressed with. So
how
sometimes
do you handle
the motor,
adversity? That's the most important question. And I don't think he's ever seen adversity yet. So we don't know.
Again, another player, if the Thunder picked up, he would be going to play at least half the season in the G League. You know, that's what I'm looking at these points. There might be a player that the more I look at, the more I realize that he's going to be a top 7 player on this Thunder team.
Yeah.
But there's no way any rookie we're going to pick up is going to automatically break through that top 7 right away. They're going to have to work their ass off in, practice and summer league and getting all ready for this stuff, because the Thunder are trying to get in that idea that you earn your spot. It's not given to you. And when they have that idea, it's one of those ideas that Trey Mann and these other guys are getting a hard time getting used to. And that's fine. You know, I get excited because I heard Poku put on 15, 20 pounds. These are the type of things that we need to start having happen with this team. Because when push comes to shove, we're going to have a solid team this next year. And if a rookie doesn't break the top 7, I'm okay with that. Because that means that we're going to be utilizing him in the G League, getting him ready for the following year.
So, let me ask you with Taylor. Do you think he has what it takes to become a Paul Pierce style mid range game player?
No, listen. In my opinion, he has no chance to be a top elite scorer in the league. Okay, really? This is the same thing that I look at Jairus Walker. I look at Taylor Hendricks. If teams are drafting them so that they're saying, eventually these are going to average 20 points a game, I just don't see these guys averaging 20 points a game. I think they're capping out at 15 points a game and being an incredibly strong defender.
In the top 10 that you don't think at least has a chance to average 20. I mean, I guess
what's
he
that?
Could. How do you pick somebody in the top 20, top 10 that you don't know?
Bro, this is what I've been saying. This is the strongest draft from 5 to 20 I've seen in a long time. Not because these players are all ready to be stars, but because they're perfect examples of what role players need to be in the NBA. These guys are high-end role players, bro, that are going to be here for 15 years.
I look at a Trey Murphy, 6'9", can really shoot the ball, play really good defense. That's the type of guy that if you're drafting a 6'9", Hooper that is going to be a role player that maybe eventually, who knows what he could end up peaking out at.
But that's what I'm saying but you have to be picking them for the first 4 years of their career at this point.
Right.
You know, yes, you can pick them for the future, but if you're picking them for saying, okay, well, the first year I want them to break the top 5 starters. Well, where are they going to start? Are they going to start over Chet? They're going to start over J-Dub? I mean, come on, guys. That's just, these guys have these positions on lock right now. So then you stop back and you're like, okay, who's next? Well, Kenny Hustle, is my opinion, is our sixth man. You know, prove me wrong, anybody. And then you can go on and say Jay Will, and the list goes down. And now we are at 8 players, 7 players already. And we haven't even got into any of the other guys that we have. So that's what I'm looking at. And I'm saying, is there any players that our rookie can jump? I don't see it. Maybe there's going to be a strong rotation of 12 players in the beginning of the season until the G League gets going, which, again, I'm totally cool with. And that's the point where I felt J-Dub separated himself. Was the first, 12 games that he got to play. It was damn, he needs to get more playing time. There he is. He's starting now. You know, and it was boom. Because, everybody saw it. You get 12 games to impress. If you don't do that, that's fine. Spend time in the G League. Poku's done it. JRE's done it. J. Will, perfect example of what a player that's not ready to play in the NBA should do right off the bat. I'm not saying that Jay Will wasn't ready to play in the NBA. I'm saying that Jay Will needed more time in the G League to get ready. And we saw how successful he was, playing 54 games last year, and most of it was back-ended. Beautiful, man.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally dig with like what you're saying there. I think one thing that's impossible to account for, and you always hope for, you know, a healthy season, but in the end, there's never a perfectly healthy season. So you look at it, and you're like, how many players who were getting role player minutes for the team ended up going down for a significant part of the season and opening up? Really, we were pulling guys up from the G League, and we still felt like we didn't have enough players.
Yeah, dude.
So everybody's going to get to play. You know, like you said, he might not crack the first 12 for the first 6 weeks of the season, but by the second 6 weeks, he could be in the starting lineup just out of necessity. And
exactly.
That's the life of the game. But we hope for better health than that. We hope that these guys can, you know, every guy stays healthy. But I think,
man, it's just a weird draft this year. You know, you and I are talking about like doing a mock draft beforehand, and like there's the separation, and I kind of want to go through that separation. We've got the top four: San Antonio with Victor, right, Mark?
Yeah.
Brandon Miller, Charlotte.
Yeah.
Scoot Henderson, Portland, which again, I see this. Now, if Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson swap positions, I don't give a shit. It's those three guys.
It's probably not going
to
happen. And
then Amen Thompson for Houston. Now, Houston could be wanting to draft, trade back, and that's totally cool. I could see that happening right there. But I think what's going to happen is the first shakeup of the draft in number five. Number five is either going to be traded out, or Detroit Pistons are going to pick up Anthony Black at number five. And I think that's going to be the first, like, big thing that people are going to be like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. Now, some people are going to sit here and be like, I would expect that for Anthony Black to go number five, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people out there that would be like, that is really high for
him. So you're saying the first four is like that first tier where you feel like pretty confident.
Yes.
And then after that, you're talking about Anthony
Black. It's a shit show, bro. Like, anything could happen.
Potentially leading the second tier at five, but who do you think would come around six or whatever?
Number six is where I think you're going to probably see another guy that
that's tough.
I see somebody like either like Carson Wallace popping up there at number six or Zur Thompson. But here's the thing is that like Orlando Magic, I don't think it's set in that number six pick. And if they're not set in that six pick, I wouldn't be surprised if a team like Washington Wizards trade above to draft Tyler Hendricks. Trade above the Pacers to draft Tyler Hendricks. So I could see a trade right there happening, a slight trade, and Tyler Hendricks going at number six to beat the Pacers. And again, it's a waterfall. So if that happens and the Pacers miss out on their guy, who are they going to go pick? And then I think that's where you see Jairus Walker be picked at number seven.
Okay.
Number eight, Jairus Walker,
and then number eight, you're thinking?
I'm thinking the other Thompson twin goes here at number eight for the Wizards or the Magic.
So you're talking about a second tier there, kind of concluding with the
eighth
pick. So where are you thinking? What happens at nine?
I think this is where if I don't want to say leftovers because that's just jacked up, but because this draft could shift so drastically, right? You could have a guy like Cason Wallace fall in there. You could have a guy. I said Jairus Walker would be gone already, but a guy like Jairus Walker could be at number nine. And to me,
let's go with who
Cason Wallace. I feel like the Jazz would be amped up to get on their team. Cason Wallace, if he was there.
Right.
And then I think
that's a little early for him. So that's another surprise.
But here's the thing about that. I don't think the more I watch his play, the more I start watching what he did in Kentucky, bro, I get excited about it. I don't think that Cason Wallace is going to get past there. And if he does, the Mavericks are going to be so stoked to get Cason Wallace right there.
So you're thinking,
he's going at 9 or 10.
So right now he puts us at number nine. So who do you think is going at 10, right? Or am I wrong? Is he at 10?
No. Let's just go with him at nine, because I think if that's the case, then the Dallas Mavericks are going to go with a little bit of Dick. They're going to go Grady Dick right here.
Okay. Dick at
11. All right,
let
me just make sure I'm not missing anybody here.
Dick at 10.
Cason Wallace. I've got him. I've got them. Tyler Hendricks is picked. All right. Just making sure I didn't piss it. Oh, Cam Whitmore. I missed Cam Whitmore, bro. I can't believe I did that.
Okay. So where's Cam Whitmore slide in?
Okay, Cam Whitmore for the Orlando Magic, number six. And that pushes everything else.
Six?
Yes, Cam Whitmore isn't going past number seven, bro. Because if he's still at seven, the Pacers are going to pick up Cam Whitmore.
See, all right.
All right, so that shifts everything back slightly. Kaysen Wallace is still available. Grady Dick, it doesn't matter. Jairus Walker, all those guys are going to be available between 9 and 11. You can say this person's going there, this person's going here, shifting and whatever. I'm telling you, there's going to be three guys that sits there. Now, everybody's going to start saying, where is the Oklahoma City Thunder going to pick? Because we're going to have a lot of players we can go here.
So
a lot.
11, remind me who 11. That was Grady Dick.
All right, so we got, I'll go through the three guys between 9 and 11. Okay, Kaysen Wallace, Jairus Walker, and Grady Dick are the three guys that I think that will go in that tier right
there. So now, as a Thunder fan, let's talk about
what's left
who
over.
We have left. We have a couple guys we really like.
Keontae George.
Nick Smith.
Nick Smith Jr., which is one of our faves. We've got Kobe Bufkin, which we love.
I haven't done my breakdown of Kobe yet, and I feel embarrassed to admit it, but it's the truth.
And then we've got Rayan, which I think is too high for him at 12 still.
I mean,
but I
knows?
Love his play.
Who knows? It's Presti. He picks
a lot of people. A lot of people are like Derek Lively at 12. I think that if we went with Derek Lively, I think we would draft or trade back.
We got Bilal.
Maxwell Lewis. GG Jackson.
Okay, so let's talk about it, dude. Just say it. Who do you think we go with at 12?
Okay, if Hendricks and Walker, Jairus Walker, are not available, then I think we're going with GG Jackson.
Okay.
He has, in my opinion, he has proven that he can play that center, that forward, that small forward. He is, in my opinion, a better version of what JRE is currently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not a diss on JRE because he got injured and he had to work his way back into that rotation, which by then Jay Will had that unlock. So I think GG Jackson is somebody we need to circle if all those guys that we said, that top tier, that top three tiers right there are all gone. I think GG Jackson and I think Nick Smith Jr. are two guys that we'd have to seriously consider as two big, massive possibilities for this team. What about you? Who would you pick?
This is, honestly, I'm leaning GG, but it's close. And I think the way that you would end up, and I've been saying Nick Smith Jr. for a while, but at this point, with what I know about the draft, and we still need to dig into it, William, and read and watch some Leonard Miller film personally. He's on our list of upcoming. We'll keep this going for the rest of the time up to the draft. Right now, we're just dropping our practice first round of the mock draft. But for me, it's Bilal.
Okay.
I can't say his name, dude.
I found out, by the way, guys, I want to apologize. And thank you, Wash, one of our incredibly amazing dudes that keeps an eye on me. I call it Bilala. And I Bilala.
You learn not to say that anymore.
And I found out that means little dick in Arabic. I found out a new word. So I really want to make sure I try to say it properly because I really don't want to call him little dick. So
old-fashioned speaking in tongues, bro.
I felt so bad. It was great. So thank you, Wash, for educating me. I will try my hardest not to call anybody else little dick.
Unless it's appropriate.
Yes. And Leonard Miller. I like Leonard Miller, but here's the thing with Leonard Miller is I look at him as one of those guys that if the Thunder traded back, I think, again, at 12, I think you could get him at 20. And be perfectly good with that. You know, like he's somebody that if we
fit 16, according to the Ringer right now. And
oh, really? Okay. So he's gaining a little bit of steam because the last one I saw was at around, you know, 21, 20. So, I mean, maybe that's a little
it's
bit high.
It's a classic Presti where if that's the guy he wants, he'll take him at 12.
Yeah. Like to me, like there's, you know, I don't think that there's a right or wrong move in this draft. And the reason is because there's so many players that are going to fit that role player mentality that you need. And even if you end up with two of these draft picks, you could end up with one of those guys that surprise you like J-Dub has. So it would be kind of cool.
And this is something we talk about all the time is like trying to learn what we think Sam Presti's saying about the team with his draft pick. It was interesting.
A lot of it, the need is what he looks at as the need being.
Need, but also like how far away he thinks he needs to solve that need.
Yeah, it's like, in the future. It's like when is Kenny Hustle going to be out of his contract? I'm going to need another Kenny Hustle in the future, you know. And
Yeah.
It's the thinking of the road.
Yeah, what type of player is going to fill certain roles? Who's he drafting? Yeah, in the end, they let them kind of declare themselves. But sometimes all you can tell is, like, what type of personality they were looking for. Like you're saying, that's with Jimmy Hustle. And then that's where I look at it and I say, I don't know. Like, I don't know any of these players at all. Like, it's crazy how much younger than us they are. Like, Gigi Jackson, he was born the year I graduated from high school. So, like, it's like, whatever. But I don't know that he wouldn't necessarily have an outstanding meeting. But I would say that, with the exception of J-Dub, there has been a serious lack of college basketball players being picked by Sam Presti. Yeah. And I think with that trend, I would say that's why I would lean Bilal. I think he might ace the meetings, really come through and impress them as the type of player that could be a really good role player. And we always, when we talk about him, we compare him to Mikal Bridges quite a bit. And to me, what that would say about the team and what Sam Presti saw as, like, the future need for the team would be like, hey, we're on, like, really the right track. We don't need to add anything, you know, here or there. We're going to find somebody that's going to take 3 years maybe to develop. But when he develops, he's going to have a set of tools that are basically, like, leave people wondering how they're going to stop him. And that's...
Well, if that's the case, then Leonard Miller has to be right up on the top of your list. Like, you know, like you said, Bilal and Leonard Miller, man. Like, those are the two guys that I'm looking at and circling, saying all those right. are the guys that I'm drafting if I don't want them to come in for the year.
You started it. This is on you, man. Next episode, Tuesday, we're going to be doing Leonard Miller. We'll be doing him twice sideways and once on Sunday.
We'll just spin him around and keep him spinning, baby.
We're going to get into it. It'll be dirty. We need to figure out what's going on with this guy. I know I've seen him play, but that's just because I watched Scoot. You know what I mean? Like, and I see he's on the G League. So I need to dig in a little bit deeper and learn a little bit about him. And I appreciate people giving us names for people to dig into. Keep it coming.
I like Nicola too, man. I just started looking at his stuff, dude. I really like his impact in the game.
We have a little document that we're sharing, and we keep a list of the names that we're going to keep going through. There are some players that are going to be drafted before we get an opportunity to pick that we haven't covered yet.
There are some players that
are going to be later. We try to start right in that 12 range and work our way around it and see where we're at. It's been a really, really fun draft period because – like, the last few have been great too, but this one, it was a little different. I was wondering how much fun is it when you're drafting 12 versus 3, versus 6 and versus 2. You know, like, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So we're going to keep on digging into it.
A little bit less nerve-wracking when you realize that Chet is, like, the perfect player of your team, and you just have to figure out how to make Orlando recognize they don't want him. It's like, come on, you don't want him.
And that's to me, like, why I look at it and I'm like, If this is like future, I don't know. Like, if Chet is really the player that we're hoping he can stay healthy, like, and you were to add a player in the league that's already a star to this team. Now, I know we won't, but if you were to, what type of player would you want to add? And that's why I always come away with Mikal Bridges. Like, he could play next to multiple other stars. He's already shown that. Sure. He can play within a role. He can be a star in his role. He can defend all five positions if he's called on to.
And he can score 25 plus points a game.
Right. I'm like, that's who I would want to go with. And I'm like, if you have a guy who potentially could be on that track, I'm not saying he is, but that's when I watched him, I was like, he carries himself that way. He's got the go-go gadget arms, which means that as his offensive game develops, it's really an unblockable shot if he learns how to – look, it's not going to be when he's 18, but when he's 25 and he's become a professional.
Let's just throw it out there then. Do the Nets – take the offer of the 12th pick this year and Houston's pick next year if Sam has the ears that this Houston Rockets are going to go out and get some veterans? So is that something that you would be like cool with, like essentially like trading those two picks?
Okay.
Because Mikal Bridges, in my opinion, could be worth more, but the reality is that if you're going to get two quote-unquote lottery picks, that's a pretty good turnout for him.
No, I wouldn't do that. But let's talk about that. Like, the Houston lottery pick potentially being available.
Sure.
What would it take to pry that from them? What were in this situation, what were we going to give up for? We were going to give up the next year's pick?
Yeah. It would take number 12 this year. It would take number next year's releasing the pick back to Houston. If we didn't give up 12, we'd have to give up Dort. We're not giving up Dort. So we keep Dort and we give up 12, and then we have to give up like Trey Mann.
I don't think Trey Mann will get the deal done, but that's all we would want to give up. So
that's all we would be willing.
All right. So
Sammy.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to be able to get way up there into that top five range, you know, because the price is going to be pretty heavy. But
dude, William, you brought that up. I like that idea right there. I think Utah might trade with OKC so they can get their pick back for next year. That's another one I wouldn't be surprised about. If they're looking at staying that rebuilding, I could see them trading maybe a nice veteran player that they have on their
team. Where are they picking right now?
They're picking at number 9. But they could, I mean, there's so much that they could do right now for that. I mean, between 9 and 12.
I'd rather hold their balls for another year.
Dude, I would rather hold their balls, but would you take it if they said, hey, we'll take 12 and next year's pick for number 9?
I'd rather hold your balls.
I know. I would too. I wouldn't. That's such a good deal, though.
I know, but it puts them in this tough spot about rebuilding for another year.
Yeah.
I don't want to give 12. Like, every other time we've ever talked about this before this last draft, I'd be like, oh, yeah, you have to do it. And then Sam Presti went out and kept 12 and got 11. And I'm finally like, all right, fine. If that's an option, I'm going to take that. I want my cake, and I want to eat it, too. I want to have my cake and eat it, too. He did it.
I mean, again,
it's a new standard.
Why not? If Sam Presti doesn't like the next year, why not trade next year's draft picks before they get devalued by, you know, the class that's coming up? You know, Sam Presti knows everything. Let's just put it like that. He knows everything with classes being strength, you know, what classes you want, which draft classes you want to get your tongs into. You know, like, he knows it all already. So if he's saying that he only wants one draft pick this year, cool. But if he called the bluff and everybody's thinking, Sam only wants one draft pick, and then the prices on the draft pick are a little bit low because Sam's not going to jump, he might be able to pick up a second pick at, like, number 9 and pay almost nothing for it, you know? Because, I mean, that's an example. Or number 11, or a team that just is not motivated by this draft because they don't see the value in it, or their player isn't available, like the Pacers. Like, their player is not available. They get upset. So what do? They trade. I could see stuff like that happening in this draft because, again, it's such a strange draft between 5 and 20. Like, there's going to be teams that are like, if we don't get this player, we don't want to be even the draft. We saw it last year with the Knicks. Think about how better the Knicks would have been with even Usman Jang on their team this year, or even J-Dub on that team. It's crazy, and they missed out on that. And so for me, there's another player like this in the draft. It's just trying to figure out which player that is and will he be available at that time.
Keep adding young, talented players. Let their competitive nature rise.
The road dog. I love
it. Race to the top. What's up, Dollar Baby? I think I'm saying that right. I hope so. But, yeah, I read that. That's pretty dope. I'm excited about CP3. Talking about G.G. Jackson to Sam Presti. That would be dope. I love the idea.
I told you guys, I mean, like, if I was in that position, G.G. would have to be on the top of my list, not just because of his scoring ability, but because of what he could turn into. And if Chris Paul is advocating for him, then you got to take a second look, at least, if you're Sam.
Let them hash it out in practice and let the alpha males rise to the top. I know that people will say that we can't get another player as good as Shea on our team. But I think that's bullshit. Shea was picked
bullshit,
at 11.
Bullshit, bro.
If you pick with the future in mind, the atmosphere that Shea creates within the organization, if there was a player that is good as Shea that was drafted, or let's just use like Shea. If Shea was drafted into the organization that Shea has created right now with Sam Presti, he would be a better player faster.
Yes, absolutely.
And absolutely. That's why I think there are, every year there's a player that falls outside of the top 10 that ends up having the chance to be an all-star year after year after year after year. And Sam Presti, when he went out and got Vince Rosman, like, he really gave an opportunity for us to be the best at finding those guys. And
that's it, man.
It's a priority because of the draft capital that was established before this team started going through a rebuild. We're going to have long-term mid to late lottery picks
for a while.
The near future and the late-term future, as far as we can see.
And listen, there's always going to be a team that's going to be willing to trade their mid-lottery pick, like at that 10 to 14 range at any time, saying, I don't want to be here, get me out of here. And Sam could always be there wrapping it up.
Yeah. Dude, I dig it, man. I think this went pretty good. Our first mock draft fell apart right when we got to the Thunder. Our failure we'll accept our failure because we knew that it would suck. We were like, let's just do it. We'll get it out of the way in May. From here on out, every Monday will be Mock Draft Monday, and we'll see if get any shakeups based on our opinion.
Thanks, Dollar Baby.
It's been interesting. The last couple ones, we ended up being a little bit like one of those talk shows with talking heads where we're like kind of disagreeing and stuff.
Yeah.
So the beautiful thing is we actually just have different opinions. We didn't hash that out in advance.
But I have to say this though, like I appreciate it because like to me we're looking at the different sides of the ball, you know, and like we fall in love with these players and the aspect of what they can bring to the team, and you know it's good to know that just because I see something it doesn't mean that that's true, you know, and it's just kind of a nut check when you're like, hey, I don't see that, I don't know what you're talking about, but. You know, I love it. I love looking at the defensive end and the impact that one can have because I look at Poku as a perfect example of that. I said, since day one, Poku is going to be a center. And everybody thought I was fucking crazy. Like, there's no way this guy could be a center. And then also last year, he had incredibly impactful player as a center last year, playing that center role. So to me, like, I look at these players for the future and trying to understand where their spot's going to be because – you know, this team is chock full of talent. I mean, you can put a player and start eight different guys on this team and be incredibly successful. And there's not a lot of teams like that out there. So you have a guy like Kenny Hustle that can play 1 through 5 and, you know, successful. That's what he played last year until he broke his hand or wrist or whatever it was that he broke. Like, this is exciting to see this team get to this point that they are now, that we can sit back, enjoy the ride, and recognize that, you know, there are going to be bumps, there are going to be injuries, but because of the structure of this team, those injuries are going to be less impactful than they have in the past for this team. Like when KD went out or Russ went out and they were injured and then they didn't get any, you know, we didn't go anywhere in the draft, or not the draft, but the playoffs. Like, that's not going to be like that for us because we're going to be super thick and deep.
Smooth. I like how you ended there. All right, Dollar Baby, you're talking about picking Jordan Hawkins at 12 and Gigi at 13. That'd be a shakeup right there. I don't know enough about Jordan Hawkins to make any statement on that, whatever. So I will add him to my list.
Not that big of a stretch for Jordan Hawkins. Like, that's the thing about it.
To my list.
As Hawks, whatever his name is. Yeah, it's not very high for him to be picked out at 12. I think that he's probably more somebody at 14 to 15, but I could see him jumping up to 12 if Sam thinks it's right. So good
job, man. I'm completely in the dark with him right now. The Ringer has him listed at 25.
Maybe, but I just don't see that, man. I don't see him going back to 25. I don't trust the Ringer,
but I just need somebody to give me a basis for doing my research. So he's going to move up the list, and we will continue to dig in as we go. We hope everybody's having a beautiful holiday weekend.
Hell yeah, dude. Hope you guys are doing some good shit, at least.
Enjoying
drinking, smoking, having fun times with fam, whatever you do, that's fun.
Yo, remember that movie Black Sheep with Chris Farley and David Spade?
Oh, and, yeah, dude.
Like,
oh,
yeah. Chris Farley goes and hangs out with, like, the kids, and they're like smoking weed, and he's like, and then he's like snorting, shooting, dun, 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 and they have it all on video, and like his fucking up his
brother's running for senator or whatever.
Yeah, dude,
that's great.
Yeah,
I love that movie. Such a good time. The beginning years of my stoner life, where I would be like watching those and laughing my ass off that I was crying so hard. That's great, man.
Good times. Great fucking times, dude. Back at it tomorrow, dude. Let's do it.
All right. It's tomorrow, man.
Joe Dirt. Joe Dirte.
Dirte?
In France.
good times. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.